You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob, and Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Jim, and yeah, it is the wonderful feeling of the Christmas season. I always enjoy it, and the weather doesn't like it, though. It's sort of gray out there, isn't it?
Well, it's gray, but a year ago, it was ice and snow. Where we live in Vancouver, I have pictures of ice and snow on the palm trees we have along the waterfront.
I'd forgotten about that.
Well, see.
There you are.
But you see, that wasn't on the market, so you wouldn't remember it. Well, yeah. Kick off the show today with some questions. Our first one comes from, I believe, David. And he says, "Hi, Jim and Bob. I want to wish both of you a Merry Christmas and healthy 2025. We appreciate your insightful conversations every week. A few questions for Bob." Well, here we go, Bob.
Yeah.
The first one, "I was pleased the Fed indicated it will drastically slow down its interest rate cutting for 2025. Inflation is not in control at all. Why did they ever start cutting?"
Oh, yeah. Well, the Fed only pretends to set its interest rate policy. Interest rates are set by, and we follow the treasury bills, either the 3-month or 6-month treasury bill, and that's set by jillions of transactions and market forces. And one of the things that people get very confused about is that short interest rate going down, and then they take that as to the Fed cutting rates, and they think it's wonderful. But if you take a look at the chart, the short-dated interest rates, as I say, for T-bills, go up in the boom, and they go down in the bust. And we have a very nice chart with the S&P and the 3-month treasury bill. You get the fastest plunges down for the stock market with the fastest plunges down in the T-bill yield. So trust me on this one. Interest rates going down is a nightmare, but Wall Street and the financial media all think that it's wonderful, and it's an intuitive conclusion, and they've never looked at the charts. And you can go back for a few hundred years on this one. In a boom, short rates up, that's very good. In a bust, short rates down, and that's very bad. And the T-bill rate peaked a couple of months ago, and it is now in a very good downtrend. And the Fed has no choice but to follow. And then, like people out there, spokespeople out there, they all get confused and think that the Fed cutting rates is going to make inflation worse. No, it's short rates up with the boom, short rates down with the bust, and it is going to be awful because the T-bill rate is going to go back towards zero, and the Fed funds rate will be a little bit above that. Going to be fun to watch.
What's your opinion on the pause in Fed rate cuts? Does it signal the Fed has messed up again?
Well, the Fed is messing up all the time. I've discussed the Fed and rate cuts that they're the T-bills go first and the Fed follows. So,
yeah. Another question here. Also, what do you make of the atrocious $60 billion federal deficit Freeland has left behind for Canadians? Politicians should be financially on the hook themselves for this kind of behavior. I assume the deficit will weigh on economic growth in Canada, but will it also reduce inflation? I heard in reference to Japan especially that a large debt burden is deflationary as well. Is that correct?
Well, deflationary in the sense that the market can't service the debt, and then you go into the full post-bubble convulsion. And, short rates will go down, but longer rates for most, certainly low-grade corporates, and most corporates go up because of liquidity. Even the yield for long-dated treasuries can go up because there's just not enough liquidity around. So the thing to get in one's thinking is get out of talking about the Fed and just look at what the T-bills are doing.
And also from David, Bob, how should the U.S. and Canadian governments ideally handle and reduce, rectify their overbloated debts? I can say cut spending and don't increase taxes and punish politicians who overspend. What say you?
Yeah, market forces will beat them up anyways. We just saw this week in the U.S. a supposed disciplined Congress come out with a bill that was 1,500 pages long, and then they reduced it down to 100 pages, and it was still too much, and Trump said no. So anyways, the nature of government is to spend until all of the money is gone, and we will get there somewhere next year. So,
our next question comes from Kathleen. Happy holidays, Bob and Jim. On Wednesday, it seems the Fed signaled to the markets it's going to continue draining liquidity from the financial system next year. Market participants reacted like panicked drunken sailors realizing the market may be running on exhaust fumes. This market realization reminds me of the Don McLean song that goes, "Bye-bye, Miss American Pie. Drove my Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry. Them good old boys were drinking whiskey and rye, singing, this will be the day that I die." Bob, is this liquidity binge over for drunken investors? And has this historic parabolic market finally expired on the banks of a levee, now devoid of liquidity? Thank you so much, Kathleen.
I love this one. It's fun with words and concepts. Yeah. Yeah, the party has been without... Well, each great financial bubble in history was the biggest thing in the world at the time. And this is what you can say. It's been the biggest bubble in history. But then you could say that about 1929. But this thing is now a monster compared to what was going on in 1929. So, and when it starts to contract, there is nothing that can keep the can restore the expansion or keep the party going. Nothing at all.
Our next set of questions come from Michael. Hello, Bob and Jim. Best to you and your listeners this holiday season. Market Watch headline, "You done." Trudeau mercilessly heckled by Liberal supporters as government implodes. Another headline from Yahoo News. Canadians react as Trudeau attends Taylor Swift's Eras tour while riots shake Montreal. Also reports Trudeau was caught busting out dancing moves and looking captivated by Taylor Swift's performance. Well, you'll seem to recall his dad was famous for dating movie stars and musicians. So why not Trudeau? We don't. He's not dating Taylor. That's Travis Kelce. And I wouldn't want to mess with Travis Kelce, even though Trudeau used to be a bar bouncer. I don't know how good he was at it. Another headline from the National Post, Trudeau fiddles as the Canadian flag burns. Bob, the headlines couldn't be any worse for Canada as a contrarian. I wonder if this is a good time to invest in Canadian stocks, particularly resource companies.
No, the whole of the stock side is quite overdone, and it got a mighty whack this week. Let me see. The Dow tanks by 1,100 points, post first 10-day losing streak since 1974. So the whack was immense, and not an accident. It was built into the degree of speculation going on. So the whack is a very strong heads up on the ability of the Bulls to keep the party going. So now we were looking for a good December, and then along comes this wacko. Maybe there would have been a whack in January, but hey, accept it when it comes. And this is a very important punctuation mark, and we'll be watching it very closely. Of course, there's been some relief on the way up, and we'll just see how far the Bulls can take it up here. But I think that this hit is a real killer, and we'll just see how far they can take it up, coming as by way of a reaction out of the bomb. I like that. Yeah, the market got bombed.
Also, Bob, stocks show sharply sold off on Wednesday, but safe haven gold also sharply declined, and treasury yields went parabolic. Bob, I'm confused. Aren't gold and U.S. treasuries safe havens? It seems the only winner was the U.S. dollar. Bitcoin, the supposed sound money play, declined the most. Bob, what's going on?
Right. Well, there's no standard array of behaviors out there. At the moment, it's T-bills down and other things down. So you play each break on its own. There are remarkable similarities to a blowout and the subsequent bust. And we'll just play it that way.
Bob, my question, a year ago, you had a list of junior gold stocks. How did they do?
Well, actually, we were right at the low in the marketplace. Well, that was one of the reasons that prompted the list. And we had done a chart on the TSE Venture Index, which is essentially gold juniors. And it got very oversold. It was a capitulation situation. So then it was just then easy to put together a list. I think it was 11 juniors. My guess is they're at the shinier times, they might have been up about 20%. Now, the reason for mentioning this is that, one, on the longer term, you want to be in the gold stocks. But if you buy the senior gold stocks or even the middling size ones, you're going to get that average performance. Whereas if you buy a select list of juniors, when the market gets going, and let's face it, out of a severe bear market bottom for the sector, first of all, the seniors get going, then the middle and size companies, and then eventually the juniors. So we got to understand that. But then as the bull market for gold stocks expands, then you'll come into the point where the juniors will fly. And one of the reasons why I did, well, one, I'm a geologist and been in gold exploration in the field for decades. But also, when you get a discovery on these things, you can just get huge things. Now, one of them we did, oh God, it was a long time ago, in 1996, and put together a list of five juniors. And one of them was Eric Weepa, and it went up to $30 from pennies, and it was taken over at a $1.1 billion market cap. So then when a junior, and often discoveries are made in a junior, and then the majors come in and get into the game. So this is where we like the juniors, because there's the selected list of 10 or 11, they can go up. But within the list, who knows, you might be lucky enough to have a discovery. It's hard. You can't say that until it happens. And so one hopes for it, and we'll just see how it all goes. It's a very practical, business-like way of getting positioned in the gold market. We're just early stages in what could be a multi-year bull market for the gold sector.
We'll take a look at the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Bob Hoy. Bob, one of your headlines, China's November retail sales miss expectation as real estate slump deepens.
Yeah. The last few words, as their real estate slump deepens. It's serious. This is a real old-fashioned contraction going on in China. And it'll spread. That's the one thing about it. You can't keep these things bottled up, and they spread. So,
do you think people in Canada, Chinese people who hold Canadian real estate, will sell their Canadian real estate to cover their losses in China?
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah. But it's like an osmosis thing. It just spreads. I mean, you've got the words by Cicero written in Rome, maybe 2,000 years ago, and he points out that when the eastern provinces, meaning Phoenicia at the eastern end of the Mediterranean basin, when they had a problem financially, it would inevitably come in and hit the senior market in New York, or sorry, then Rome. So this is what it's the way markets have worked for 2,000 years. And the outer markets become very frothy because they have a small cap, and of course aggressive traders from the financial center get in on it and then blow it all up, and then it starts to hit, and then the problem may be thought to be isolated in the eastern provinces. It's just like in New York in the 1800s, when London was the main money market, and traders in London would notice that New York had a problem, but it was then just a junior speculative market, so it didn't matter. But it does matter, because when the junior speculative market gets hit, it spreads back to the financial center and all the senior stocks. So after 1929, I think the S&P, I think its decline was 87%, whereas in London, their list of their main stocks only fell in half. And that was, well, because New York was the junior speculative market then. So you can take that now to hot stocks in any of the wilder exchanges, and they're going to fall 87%, and maybe the senior New York indexes will fall in half. That sort of thing.
A headline from Reuters: China capital market outflows hit record high after Trump election win. People are bailing from China.
Oh yeah! Now this is the other thing in 1929. While it was a speculative market, it did have large cap stocks. So in the final stages of 1929, the hot money in Europe was traveling over and buying New York.
In Mexico, the drug cartels have taken over the avocado trade because avocados are worth a small fortune. I wonder if the same thing's going to happen in Africa with cocoa soaring to above $12,000 to reach fresh record on supply here.
Yeah, they had some crop problems in a blight disease or something with cocoa. And I should have looked up what the price was a couple of years ago. But anyways, it's up to $12,000 now. And it's been one hell of a run. So maybe in the new year we'll take a look at it and see if we can put a chart on it and note whether it is exceptionally overbought or whatever. It'll be worth taking a look at it.
No
early
chips
in the new year.
No chips in the cookies you leave for Santa. Just milk and regular cookies, not the chocolate chip ones.
That's funny.
From Bloomberg, blackout risk is rising for North American grid. Are we sucking too much power out of the grid to power AI and the things like mining Bitcoin?
Well, there is an increasing demand. But the problem is the kooks that have forced interruptible power to be such a large portion of the grid. And interruptible power, of course, is solar fields and wind stations. And these don't work all the time, and they do more harm than good. When you think about it, Jim, for every intermittent power source you put in, like a windmill, you have to build the equivalent as backup. So then why not just build the equivalent backup without going through the nonsense of building windmills? But people are beginning to get on to this now. They're realizing that it's very costly, ruins the scenery, kills whales, and who knows what. Oh, jillions of birds with the blades sweeping around. And they're realizing that it's just not worth it. They thought these things might last 20 years, but they're lasting shorter than that. And we've got a little cartoon images that I put together. And if people are interested, they can get in touch, and we'd be glad to send them the cartoon image.
Headline from Yahoo, world's worst performing currency hurts dollar borrowers in Brazil.
Isn't that amazing?
Are they Brazil nuts?
Yeah, too many nuts there. We've been using Argentina as the example. And from time to time, Argentina will complain about the strength of the U.S. dollar. And that's mainly because they owe so many of them into New York. And this then is the classic on a post-bubble contraction, where the problem is trying to service debt from a weak local currency into a firm senior currency. I mean, even Gresham in the 1550s wrote about this in letters to the British Crown, that it is very difficult to service debt from a weak local currency into a strong senior currency. The strong senior currency then was the guilder in Antwerp. So, yeah.
Argentina has just renegotiated their debt with the IMF for the gazillionth time.
Yeah.
So they're always trying to crawl out from a big hole.
Yeah.
And our last headline, can China shield the biggest uninsured economy from floods?
Oh, that one really got my attention, Jim, because obviously different layers of industry and commerce and whatever, there's not the insurance coverage that you would have, say, in North America or in Europe. So there's a whole lot of liability out there that's not covered by insurance. So when it goes bad,
in China, I think when the government says we have your back, what they mean is we're going to shoot you in the back. And then send your family the bill for the bullet.
Yeah.
Bob, looking forward to Christmas and all the happy holiday cheer.
Yeah, you and to our listeners as well. I have a very festive one. I remember. It was one from the 1950s with the then Beatniks. And the salutation was, have a cool Yule and a frantic first. How about that?
I'll stick with that.
A good recipe. Okay, Jim, we'll talk to you soon.
Happy holidays.
Yep.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.